I'm here talking with J. Andrew Baker, an Aboriginal and gay man who does not identify as two-spirited. So I'm interested in finding out a little bit about why that is.
Well, the main reason why I identify as an Aboriginal gay man and not as two-spirited is because my teachings around two-spirit is different. I can respect the fact that two-spirit as a modern term or as a term that's come into our communities, both queer community and LGBT community, in its current definition, which a lot of that pulls from the Ojibwe language in the phrase Nish Manado, Wak, which is the concept of literally two spirits. Number one, in my teachings, there is a belief that you can't have two spirits within your body, that every spirit has a male and a female side, regardless of your sexuality or gender.
Oh, interesting.
That's one of the teachings that I hold.
Where does that teaching come from?
That teaching comes from a variety of different elders within a number of different nations, but specifically the Ojibwe community. I've spent time with different traditions. And one of the things that I think that is important is that when we look at traditional family and gender roles, as it's often talked about in First Nations culture, it's reinforced a lot through colonialism. It's reinforced through the roles that were put upon First Nations people through colonization, through residential school trauma, through a variety of sources that this is what women do, this is what men do, and that you never blend in between.
Mm-hmm. So you see that as coming from sort of the white colonial settler model.
Yes, because you had to fit within that. Yes. Now, it's not that there weren't different roles that traditionally males did or women did, but the point is that those roles shifted along the way. As an example, when you're in Northern Ontario, one of the ones that I often think of is hearing Lillian Pitawanakwet discuss the concept of moon time.
Mm-hmm.
In Ojibwe culture, moon time is often, the choice of words at the time is respected, but the choice of words that I feel when I see it is feared or disrespected. You shouldn't touch the medicines during that time.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't touch an eagle feather during that time. You shouldn't smudge during that time. You shouldn't do anything during that time because you could hurt the men with your power. So it's still this concept of power, but this power that could harm.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that that's a time when a woman is healing and transforming, but we've lost that somewhere. So one of the things that she spoke about was her family were midwives. So her comment was, if a fire needs to be built, I build it. That's traditionally a man's role. If a woman comes to me in labor and I'm on my moon time, I don't tell her to wait 7 days.
Yes, exactly.
We do what we need to do for our community. So those rules may have been in place, but they were much more flexible or accountable to the diversity of people and the things that were going on.
So the priority is always the safety and security and health
and
of the
well-being
people, the community.
Of community.
Oh, that's a great
And
point.
So I think that that's the main difference that goes on now is that when you're looking at Aboriginal cultural traditions, oftentimes because we were traumatized or not allowed to practice in the early 1990s, our cultures were made illegal. You couldn't even hire a lawyer to represent you in land claims disputes during that time.
Raise money to even do
any
the land claim dispute.
Lobbying, any form of aspect. And I think what happens as a result of that is that things get frozen in time.
Mm-hmm.
As I've come to work with communities, you often hear of, oh, this is the way it's always been done, or we don't have a word for that. The truth was there was a word for that. And the other truth is that that wasn't always the way that it was done.
Mm. Sometimes the memories can be a little short.
Well, and sometimes we don't have the generational history because it was lost initially through disease.
Mm-hmm.
It was then lost through traumatization. It was then lost through relocation into reserve territories. And then it was lost through residential schools, 60s scoop, and otherwise. So there's a whole lot of loss of multi-generational stories of this is the way that we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when this happened, that's been lost over a long period of time. So we often forget the fact that it may not have always been done this way or otherwise. And so I think that it's important to think of that, that communities were much more diverse than people realize, much more developed than people realize. Oftentimes there's this colonial view of the way that we were taught it in school, of the concept of these savages who were rescued. Mm-hmm. The truth is that the nations that were in North America were well-established systems, many of them with confederacies and constitutions, advanced government.
In many cases, we were the ones doing the rescuing.
Yes, in that type of situation. So we have to remember that. And when we look at our teachings, we also have to think about the hold that Christian heritage has on our ancestry and on what's been told to us, and where it blends and where it doesn't.
So you think a lot of the time, maybe because of that Christianization, the two-spirited history simply didn't get passed along? Or do you think maybe it went underground in some way?
I think that there would have always been LGBT-identified or two-spirit people within communities, so there would have been those teachings in that sense within those people. But there's that process of excluding or removing or these types of things along those lines.
One of the big losses that our people have experienced is the loss of language. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about how you came to learn Ojibwe?
I was not raised in a household that identified its Aboriginal ancestry, and in fact some still question it in that process within my family. For myself, I'm very good with language, so I speak a number of languages. I can carry a conversation in about six, and you give me 8 hours on a plane, and I can carry a conversation in a few more. But for me, language carries certain roots. And I'll give reference to a European language for a reason, because we often don't think of European people as indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
When they were colonized.
Indigenous to other areas.
To other areas. And one of the languages that's over there that I speak, which is Dutch or Flemish, still has certain parts of it where you can hear the indigenous thinking in the language.
Interesting.
One of them being the phrase in English, nice to meet you. In German, it's net zie kennen zuleren. And in Dutch nowadays, you say achenam. But the original phrase was achenam kennis met u te maken, which is still used in formal settings.
Mm-hmm.
Literally translates, it means pleasant knowledge with you I have to make.
Interesting. So it's
so
a
it's
commitment.
Action-based. It's about we're going to get to know each other. We're going to do good things with each other.
Hmm.
So it's relational. Our languages are that way. They're relational. They're descriptive. They haven't been short-formed or cut down or quickened in that sense.
Hmm.
And I think that if you're to come to understand any culture, be it colonial English culture, be it Ojibwe culture, be it Mohawk culture, those teachings are in the language, no matter which language it is. So when you come to carry even pieces of that language and understand what those pieces are, you gain those teachings in an in-depth way. So along the way, I've learned it on powwow trails. I've taken university courses. I've worked with fluent speakers. I've worked with functional second language speakers. Lots of different strategies that way.
So tell us some of the Ojibwe terms that you're familiar with around two-spirited or sexuality and gender.
The first ones that come up for a lot of people is the concept of some of what I would call the more modern terms. The Okwe-Winene, or the Okwe-Nene, which is a term of endearment nowadays. But when I hear it, what I'm hearing is emphasis with the go, woman, man. So that concept of, oh, it's a man-woman. When you think in the language and you go, So there's a part of it, but it's used in an honorable way now, but it comes to...
So is it like a reclaiming the way people did with queer?
Yes, and I think that that might have that, but I think that that word may have rooted from either not understanding how descriptive Ojibwe is as an example, because in Ojibwe, it's a very descriptive language. Each sound has different aspects. When you look at the word for drum as an example, there's the teachings of the drum right in that sound. De-we-gun. De, or o-de, means heart.
Mm-hmm.
That sound, we, relates to sound. And the concept of gun is a final morpheme that represents a thing within the world becoming physical.
Mm.
So the idea of the heartbeat of Mother Earth coming into this thing. So those teachings of the heartbeat of Mother Earth and why we drum and all is in the word.
That's interesting, because when you say it, it almost sounds onomatopoeic in that you can hear sort of a drum sound in the word.
Yeah, so that's one of the things in that process. So Ojibwe is really descriptive. Some of the phrases you'd have to use in context, because as an example, gender in the language isn't masculine or feminine like in other languages. It's the concept of animate or inanimate.
Huh.
Some people would say the concept of having a soul or not having a soul. I would say, for myself, the best way to describe animate and inanimate is the concept of motion or sacredness to in motion or secularness in terms of the perception.
Okay.
From what I've seen along the ways. Because, as an example, tobacco, sema in the language, when you're using it in ceremony, it's used in an animate sense.
So it has a soul.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you're smoking it in a cigarette, it's inanimate.
Interesting. So it's almost a different creature, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a huge thing. So some of the terms that I think of is like zage a nine one, the concept of she or he who loves men.
Mm-hmm.
It's descriptive. It's also not necessarily sexualized. It's from
it's
an emotional
relational.
Place. It's relational. And when I think of sexualization or attraction, I think of the concept of misawenaw. And so that's the concept of being attracted to somebody.
Okay.
So you could say, as an example, nene, a man, wije nene wagwan, the concept of with men, je mshawen nawan. So the concept of from now on or from the past moving forward, a man who's attracted to men.
So it's like an ongoing
yes.
description.
Yes, because of that je. But again, it's descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
It's
so
not a single
a
word.
So it doesn't describe a type of person. It
yes.
describes a specific person and something about them.
And what they're doing or part of who they are.
Okay.
It also means that that's not the only thing that they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's a piece of them. So it's describing. It's more in that sense.
In that regard, do you find that Ojibwe terms that might describe gender or sexuality avoid reducing people to particular identities and limiting them in some way?
I think that there's definitely identities along the way, but I don't know whether historically there would have been specific identities such as queer or
mm-hmm.
trans or these types of things. There would have been terms to describe what that person was doing,
mm-hmm.
but that person was a person, first and foremost.
So, for instance, if I had been alive at that point, how would people describe the fact that I'm attracted to other women, or that I'm attracted to both men and women, or that I'm, say, attracted to trans people? Or
exactly.
How would people talk about that?
Well, and that would be a really challenging one, because you're talking about multiple sections there.
Mm. Because it is hard to capture all of who you are.
And part of it is that
life.
As a second language speaker, and even as first language speakers, it's challenging because they aren't words that they heard their parents speak.
Mm.
Because, you don't talk about that. So those words were lost. The other thing is, as a second language speaker, you have to figure out how to process through that. So when I think about that, I would think about what you're describing,
mm-hmm.
that you are a person. And I might even use the word for person, the concept of bamadzajik, or bamadzit, the concept of the one who is living, not even like a person, to describe who you are. And then discussing the fact that you're attracted to or that you have relationships with a variety of people. And really what you're saying is that your attraction may be diverse, or it may be for a reason that's not physical. And it becomes a definition of who you are and really what's going on. It becomes more in-depth. It means that there's more than one type of bisexual person or more than one type of queer person, things along those lines. The key phrase there is that it's descriptive. It's describing what's happening, what's going on. So I think that there's value in remembering those descriptions. But I think the challenge is that in any Aboriginal language, when you get descriptive, phrases get long.
Mm. Yeah, that could be tricky.
You know,
gay is nice and short. You can fit it in the headline of an organization.
Yes. Ogokwe nene, as an example, is short. It's easy to remember, or gokwe nene, depending on your dialect. It's really short, it's really easy, and people are okay with it.
And what does that mean?
Well, that's going back to, I talked about that earlier, the concept of emphasis, and then it literally says woman, man.
Okay.
Okay.
And would that be used to describe like a queer person in general, or is that specific to gender rather than sexuality?
That term is used to describe people who kind of fit under that umbrella.
Okay.
However, for me, it might link more into, for me, and often also with Two-Spirit as a definition, it links more in modern terms in my mind to trans community.
Oh, okay.
When I hear the term Two-Spirit, and a lot of that might be because of the imagery that's associated with it, or the publications that have been done by organizations doing that work, a lot of it has been trans work because that work was needed.
Mm-hmm. Because there's really no information almost on trans people, period. But then also once you get intersectional with it, the information available becomes even more scarce.
So a lot of the information around Two-Spirit is around gender, not sexuality.
Okay, so it may not specifically refer to gender only, but that's,
yes,
in practice, that's how it's been used.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that I think that is a value. The other one that is used sometimes is the concept of Kitchitakwe or Ogitchitakwe. This term can have challenge outside of the Two-Spirit community. In traditional ceremony, in traditional life, Ogitchita is the concept of warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally means the one who's doing great things.
Oh.
Okay.
So it doesn't necessarily mean going to war, but it's about achievement and
yes. And it's the concept of somebody who would stand up for their community. And the concept of warrior goes in different ways.
So it could be activist, it could be community builder.
Yeah, those types of aspects. When you say Ogitchitakwe, you're describing somebody who you would perceive as a woman,
mm-hmm,
who's standing in that position.
So it's not about sexuality or gender, it's about your role in community.
Yes. But Two-Spirit community often links that term with lesbians,
mm-hmm,
with trans men, oddly, these types of linkages. And so it creates an identity for them, but it also can challenge the historic identity of that name.
And presumably could make people who feel that they themselves fall under that category, but who don't identify as LGBTQ, make them feel uncomfortable that you're,
yes,
taking something away from their,
yes,
place and community.
Now, what I think is of value in the modern sense of Two-Spirit is it became a term that people from multiple nations could identify with. It was an English term in the language that we were most speaking with, and it meant that there could be a sense of belonging and a sense of, I guess you could say, standardization, so that somebody who was Aboriginal, who was LGBT, who was being excluded, could say, I'm Two-Spirit, and they would have a place.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have a group of people who they can identify with, who were similar to them, who had similar journeys, similar stories. So I think there's value to that. Okay. So I think that that's really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for sharing what you've done with us today, and, mm-hmm, I look forward to talking to you again, Andrew.
Sounds good.